they say, if you want to practice Zen, that you have to be prepared to die. So what does that mean? Suzuki Rosha, founder of the San Francisco Zen Center and the author of the famous book Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, said, "To live in the realm of Buddha nature means to die as a small being moment by moment by moment." Similarly, Japanese Zen master Shido Bunin, in the first line of a Waka poem, wrote, "Die while alive and be completely dead. Die while alive and be completely dead." So exactly what do these teachers mean? They're referring to the death of our idea of this moment and to the death of our idea of who is it that's experiencing this moment. And in Zen, we refer to this as the great death. And Zen Master Dogen described it this way: "The whole universe shatters into 100 pieces. In the great death, there is no heaven and no earth. Once body and mind have turned over, there is only this to say: past mind cannot be grasped, present mind cannot be grasped, and future mind cannot be grasped." So in practical terms, if I am grounded in the idea that I am me and you are you, then my experience is that we are different and separate. There's me right here, and there's you over there, and we focus on our individual characteristics. So if my mind is still and that it stops producing ideas of who I am and who you are, then I have a different experience. I directly experience that you and I really are not separate despite appearances. And instead, we are one. I also experience that I am not less because of the death of this idea of a separate self. The separate me is actually much more. So the heart of the practice is to surrender who we think we are, that which is called the great death, right? Let go of all the ideas that establish ourselves as individual people, which is confirmed thousands and thousands of times. Every time we look in the mirror, we confirm ourselves as a separate being. Every time we have a conversation, we are confirming ourselves as a separate being. Every time we argue a particular opinion or view, we are confirming ourselves as a separate person, a separate entity. And in doing so, and being attached to doing so, we do ourselves a great disservice and keep ourselves in this very small, limited way. But if we practice, if we really sit with dedication, slowly and slowly, this little confined being becomes greater and greater and greater as our mind becomes more and more still. French philosopher and mathematician René Descartes said famously, "I think, therefore I am. I think, therefore I am." From the Zen perspective, from our Zen experience, we could say, "I don't think, therefore I am not." When I don't think, I am not. Non-thinking, that is a still mind, is a death to the separate self and a separate reality. Death simply means letting go, surrendering, pouring out all of the ways in which we continue to confirm ourselves as a separate being. Kalu Rinpoche expressed it this way: "You live in illusions and the appearance of things, but there is a reality beyond illusion, and you are that reality. When you recognize this, you will realize that you are really nothing, and being nothing, you are everything." You know, one way we would express this is, you're nothing. Right? But just the change of intonation is, you are nothing. And how beautiful that is, to have that burden relieved, being the center of the universe. So, who are you? When you pour yourself out, and yourself gets smaller and smaller and smaller, who are you? Who is this? When we die this great death, actually it brings us to life. It brings us to life in ways that we could have never imagined. And through this process, we realize who we really are. We realize our Buddha nature, our true selves, and our heart opens, and compassion is actualized, and actually we experience great joy. And this experience transforms how we live our lives. But as Suzuki pointed out, we must die into each moment, not just one moment. It's not a one-time deal. To be alive, we must be continually dying, letting go of the idea, the experience of being a separate self, being who we think we are. Right? If you could imagine the death grip that we have on who we think we are. Right? It's not easy to let go of. So this practice, like Suzuki said, is letting go, moment by moment. And I don't care how enlightened you are, this continues to happen for our entire lives. It's constantly letting go, letting go. I came across... Hopefully it's, it didn't disappear from my phone. A wonderful little story. And this is a conversation with a Korean-born Zen teacher, Sun San Nim. And he was part of that movement of teachers that came from the East to the West. And a lot of you may have heard of him, but he wrote a wonderful book called Dropping Ashes on the Buddha, The Teachings of Zen Master Sun Sun. So he recounts this conversation with Gita, a 7-year-old daughter of one of his students at the Cambridge Zen Center, after the death of the center's beloved cat, cleverly named Katz. K-A-T-Z. Now, Katz is the transcription of the famous Buddhist belly shout, used as a way of focusing energy and intention during Zen practice. Right? And Katz had died after a long illness and was given the traditional Buddhist burial. But the little girl remained troubled by his death. And one day after practice, she came to the great Zen teacher for an explanation. He relays this exchange. "What happened to Katsi? Where did he go?" And so-and-so said, "Where do you come from?" And she says, "From my mother's belly." "And where does your mother come from?" And Gita was silent. So-and-so said, "Everything in the world comes from one thing. It is like a cookie factory. many different kinds of cookies are made. Lions and tigers and elephants and houses and people. They all have different shapes and different names, but they are all made from the same dough and they taste the same. So all the different things that you see, a cat, a person, a tree, the sun, this floor, all these things are the same. What are they? With an eye to our tendency to mistake things' name for its thingness, so-and-so answers by urging the little girl to contact the universal life force of the metaphysical cookie. People give them many different names, but in themselves they have no names. When you are thinking, all things have different names and different shapes. But when you are not thinking, all things are the same. There are no words for them. People make the words. A cat doesn't say, I am a cat. People say, this is a cat. The sun doesn't say, my name is sun. People say, this is the sun. So when someone asks you, what is this? How should you answer? I shouldn't use words. So-and-so said, very good. You shouldn't use words. So if someone asks you, what is Buddha? What would be a good answer? And Gita was silent. And so-and-so said, now you ask me. She says, what is Buddha? And so-and-so hit the floor. And Gita laughed. So-and-so said, now I ask you, what is Buddha? And Gita hit the floor. What is your mother? The floor. What are you? She hits the floor. Very good. That is what all things in the world are made of. You and Buddha and God and your mother and the whole world are the same. Gita smiled. So-and-so said, do you have any more questions? You still haven't told me where cats went. So-and-so leaned over and looked her into the eyes and said, you already understand. And Gita said, oh, and hit the very hard and then laughed. So-and-so ends the anecdote with an exchange intended to be funny, but in fact tragic testimony to contemporary education being forced on industrialized specialization. Anyway, it ends with, as she was opening the door, she turned to him and said, but I'm not going to answer that way when I'm in school. I'm going to give regular answers. So. So at this juncture, it's important to point, an important point needs to be made. We should not be deceived into thinking that one way of seeing is preferential to the other. This would just be more delusion. In the Zen, we say, no leaning. That's because both experiences are valid. The world of this and that, of you and me, and the world of non-separation, or oneness. The two experiences must be integrated into one reality, or there is the danger that we will continue to function in in the world in a lopsided way. Right? It's very easy to get caught in the idea, wow, I am enlightened now. Okay, so how do you take that enlightenment and live in the everyday world? So you have to be able to work with both. And Roshi Kennedy once spoke to this when he said, in the Zen world, there is often an emphasis on clarity of mind or insight. Sometimes it is not how clear your mind is, but how dirty your hands are from working for others. So emptiness must function in concert with form. Insight must be integrated and actualized in the relative world. Otherwise, what good would it be? The key is, how do we live it out? And can we use this insight in service of others? So I'm going to end with a haiku. Barns burnt down. Now I can see the moon.